on, say that again. I gotta get that on tape.
As a member of my family has been involved in every conflict the United States has been involved in for approximately the past 200 years.
You've had a very long history of military service in your family.
I'm an Iraqi war veteran. My father is a Vietnam veteran. My cousin is a Gulf War veteran. My grandfather fought in Normandy. My great-uncle fought in Korea. And I have a great-grandfather that fought during the Civil War.
Well, I think for the whole overview of that, that will be very good for the interview because, you know, the problem I see nowadays is anybody that's even standing up and speaking out, whether they have anti-war sentiments, whether they don't have it, you know, it's just the fact that they're standing up and calling attention to it, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, these guys are traitors, or there's something's wrong with them, you know, they're disgracing their service, how dare they question the government, you know, and that's sick. You know, who better to have the right than you guys?
I'm not protesting the war. I'm protesting their inability to take care of those they sent to the war.
Right. And
that's,
you know,
what I'm protesting. The war, just Saddam being the dictator that he was and is, it's justified to go. We went over there and we saved, we'll eventually be saving lives and giving these people hope where there was no hope. But, you know, the weapons of mass destruction, you know, the munitions that I witnessed, that I experienced, that I saw, you know, were things that could be used in allocation with the weapons of mass destruction. It was a specific type of munitions that could be used with that, to detonate them, and, you know, for whatever extent that they would be used. Well, they weren't just your average, ordinary grenades and RPGs and things like that. They were very high-tech type of munitions. And, you know, I'm not knocking the war. I'm not knocking our reasons for going over there. I don't think President Bush or his administration has to justify us going over there. I think as human beings, we had a obligation to other human beings to try to give them, help them with their situation. But the only problem I have is with the system, the way that we're being treated when we return home. No, we're not being spit on and called baby killers. That hasn't happened yet. But what has happened is that we're coming home with problems, you know, mental wounds, physical wounds, and things such as that are being ignored, that are being pushed away, that are being just totally decimated. And the veterans are left to live on the streets.
Yeah.
And that's not adequate, that's not acceptable, that's not right. If you have to create a new tax just to take care of your veterans, if you want your country to remain your country and free, that tax is justified, that tax is needed, essential, because these veterans, the young people are seeing the veterans are being walked all over, mistreated, and thrown away. And your young people are going to, they're already saying no. It's already there in the numbers. They can put all the puppets they want to in front of the television and in front of the newspapers and the reporters and say it's because of the bonuses, it's because of the jobs, the economy, and all that. The truth of the matter is, it's because these younger adults are seeing with their own two eyes how a veteran is being treated, and they do not want anything to do with it.
Right. You know, and I wasn't trying to even say anything about you being anti-war, but I mean, I'd say right now, it's been about a 60-40 mix of guys that have come back that are now opposed, or, you know, some problems with it, and, you know, it's a good thing to hear from you with your side of it, too. You know, it gives a lot of balance to this, because, you know, it's...
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, the veterans, especially the ones that's got 10, 12, 15, maybe 20 years, that are starting to turn around and oppose it, they have to remember something, and that as a soldier, that's what their job is to do. Now, they may have jobs on base doing this and that, but your primary job, what you're originally trained to do, is be a soldier and fight for your country. livelihood, especially as a lifer.
Right.
That's what you train for the entire time that you're in the military. But what you have to understand is that it does not have to be this way after the war.
Right.
War is hell. War is unpredictable. And things happen. Shitty things happen. Good things happen. Terrible things happen. But you cannot turn around and protest against the war because, you know, you come down with PTSD and now your life's in a shithole and it's the war's fault. Yeah, it's the war's fault, but the VA is supposed to be there to help take care of you and get you through it. You'll never heal from it. You'll never get over it. You'll never be rid of PTSD, but you can survive with it. You can create a life that you live with it, you acknowledge it, you deal with it on a day-to-day basis, and you can live some type of resemblance of what you did live at one time. Only if they want to take care of their veterans. If they prioritize their veterans, number one, and take care of them.
Yeah, now one thing I was going to say about the guys that I've seen that are vets that are protesting, it's not necessarily the war itself. It is the, you know, the troop deaths. And, you know, I've made sure if I see a guy show up that I'm really, you know, I want to know what brought him out there. And a lot of times these guys are saying it was the civilian casualties they saw and stuff like that. It's not the overall thing, but they are drawing attention. You know, a lot of the guys carry signs with the death toll on it, basically, and that's what their thing is. And, you know, that's... You know, it's a touchy issue. I mean, it's a real divided situation right now.
Well, you see, I have something there that like a measuring stick to it as far as the war and death toll and all that and the idea of protesting it. Back when I was with the 875th Engineers, we went out on what they call a two-week bivouac. Well, we went down to Camp Robinson, Little Rock, little Army National Guard camp there in Little Rock there, and we were out in the field during the most hellacious, terrible thunderstorm I ever seen in my life. I mean, it looked like something off a movie. There was lightning. You could not walk 3 feet without being hit by lightning. We were not brought in to the indoors. We were left outside in our pump tents, where we had one man struck by lightning and killed, and two others. One man, his leg was totally blown off at the kneecap by being hit by lightning.
Ooh.
And this was totally unacceptable to me, and I told my commander and everyone there that had anything on their collar that meant anything. I told them, I said, this was unacceptable, this was avoidable, this storm was something that was out of the ordinary. We should have been put in these empty barracks that were left empty here, and which we were left in the field. And I think it was a terrible judgment call. It should have been made differently. And then our CO ultimately is responsible for this man's death, and he should be dealt with accordingly, because it was well within his ability to take us out of a dangerous environment and put us in some place that's relatively safe. You know, so as far as talking about people being killed in war, hey, that happens in war. I understand that. You know, I understand the blood, the guts, the deaths, and all that. But you can't protest. You can't turn around and protest against it after, you know, spending years and years. There's a lot of guys, and, you know, that I served with that were sergeants in E6s, E7s, E8s, E9s, that served through all of this peacetime, but never had to go into a combat environment. Now that they're there, and they're totally clueless. They're scared shitless. They're scared to go out on missions. I had a platoon sergeant that wouldn't go out on a mission with us because we were 818 slow tractor-trailer trucks. He'd rather go out with second platoon and with five tons with the ability to get up and go if they had to. You know, he was scared. And the thing about it is you know, that's war. You know, you put wherever you're needed at, you do the job you're trained to do, then you hope and pray for the best. You know, and you do the best job you can do. You know, you can't down the war because people get killed. That's why it's war. You know, and you just have to acknowledge, you know, especially when you serve, you know, 10, 15 years in peacetime. All that time, you're supposed to be trained for that one time that you went to war. You know, serve your country, do your job, and do it well. Be efficient and win the war. You know?
Yeah, and be treated right. You know, that's the main thing, you know, because, I cover whatever comes, you know, whatever the opinion of people I talk to, But it's like, the main thing is, when you get home, that's the biggest issue with these guys, is their treatment, you know?
Exactly. You just went from fighting a war for your country, now you have to fight a war for yourself. You have to fight a war to gain the benefits that you need, that you deserve, that you earn. And that's the pitiful, disgusting, aggravating thing about it. Because you got to come home and you got to fight for benefits that you don't earn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like working a week for somebody and going back and having to basically threaten to whoop your boss's ass to get paid. You know, you shouldn't have to do that. And if you have a boss that works you and refuses to pay you, then you've got the right to take them to court and make them pay. But with the VA says, well, we're not going to take care of you. You don't have the right to sue them for that privilege.
Mm-mm.
You don't have the right to take them to court and show where they're reasonably responsible for the condition you're in and that you need them to do their obligation to stand up and participate and to what they were obligated to do.
Here's something funny. Did you see recently that they're trying to pass a law where you cannot sue a commanding officer or a superior for negligence anymore?
I've heard that. I think Douglas told me about that.
Mm-hmm. It's being drafted in Congress right now where they're going to protect the chain of command, which is ridiculous because of all the corruption going on, especially like at Fort Stewart and, you know, Fort Hood, where even if you have proof positive that your commander put you in danger deliberately or harassed you, you're not even allowed to file a civil suit on him now.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Well, you're putting these people above the law when you do that.
Yep.
And what do you expect to breed out of that but corruption?
And I've noticed that in the last year or so, the whole chain of command has been getting more and more corrupt because it seems like with the whole attitude of the VA and, you know, the background of the Bush, you know, the Bush administration saying, well, we can do this, it's our right, it's giving every commander in the Army this arrogance of going, well, this is what we have the right to do. If we feel we need to do this, it's in your best interest, you know. And,
yep,
you know, I think in the last year, those incidences of command abuse,
Well, you know what, we experienced that during it to a certain extent. We had guys that were with this unit that are 20-year veterans, or 15 to 20-year veterans. They're still at specialist pay grade. And we've got young guys that just come in that might have 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden they're promoted to a sergeant before these other guys, you know, have got all these years in. They got the points, they got the PLDC, they got all the requirements to be promoted. But yet, they're stepped over, and somebody that they consider a buddy gets promoted. You know what I mean? The captain's buddy, the captain's brown nose, the CO's, you know, butt licker, you know, he gets promoted above, you know, this guy's been here 15 years, he's got all the schooling and got all the points and the time in,
you know,
to be promoted, you know. And then something else that I found very interesting and very truthful is if you look at the way the military is right now, you have got tremendously overweight people in the military now. And
yep.
Back when I was in 1989 to 1993, I believe, you know, you either pass the PT test, a tape of measurement, and a body fat ratio test, or you was out. You had one chance. If you did not tape out and weigh the approximate weight limit that you're supposed to weigh in at, you got put on what they call a Fat Boys program, and within 3 months, if you did not get within the specifications, you were discharged.
Yep, Fat Boy program. I know I was in it.
Well, it doesn't exist no more as far as I can see.
Yeah, it doesn't. Hold on just a second.